Hello and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or interfaith relations. Today, I've invited Rohan Jadoram to a Zoom recording for our broadcast. Rohan, a warm welcome and hi to our radio program.
Kia ora, and thank you for the invitation. Looking forward to the discussion.
Thank you, Rohan, for joining us. Rohan is the former Community Resilience Manager for Auckland Emergency Management, where he spent 7 years leading the department's resilience building work with a focus on initiatives to effectively engage and communicate with Auckland's diverse communities. He has been involved with many emergency responses over the last several years and has led a response function as part of the incident management team. Prior to working in the civil defense emergency management sector, he worked at the Human Rights Commission in lead roles, including being part of the working group to develop this statement on religious diversity, which we know from the Religious Diversity Center. Rohan, on the 27th of July this year, exactly 6 months after the damages of Cyclone Gabriel in the city, the Religious Diversity Center and the Auckland Emergency Management for Auckland Council launched the result of a study called Resilient Religious Communities, a Guide to Disaster Resilience. What was the background of this resource?
That's a good question. It basically came about in terms of the shift in the civil defence emergency management sector, which is the context I've been working in the last several years. Since 1916, there's been a realisation following a number of emergencies and disasters in New Zealand that it's community resilience that will save lives and safeguard communities. So often people wait for instruction, but given the types of emergencies that we and the scale of the emergencies that we've recently have to deal with, official agencies are often overwhelmed and under enormous pressure, particularly in that first 72 hours. And often community members seek support and comfort from community leaders. Given my previous work at the Human Rights Commission, working with a number of religious communities, I realised that religious leaders have a tremendous role to play in terms of supporting and guiding their community to ensure they're safe during emergency responses. So that was the context, and it has been a process of ensuring that the civil defence emergency sector not only invest in relationships with our emergency service partners, which is a business as usual, and our welfare partners and essential providers of key services like water and communications, but also invest in relationships with community. And I think that's been the gap. And this resource really was about, in terms of the engagement process, is to invest in those relationships, to connect and link key people in the community with official agencies who are responsible for the coordination of emergency responses. So that was the driver behind the project.
And when you say the driver, how did you get in touch with the Religious Diversity Center? Was it because you were trying to approach the religious leaders and you were already in touch with Paul Morris, Professor Paul Morris and others? Is that how it came about to work together with the RDC?
Yes, it's really about relationships. And fortunately, I was well placed. I have had a relationship with a few of your trustees, including Paul, for many years, following my previous work with a number of, not just the Statement of Religious Diversity, but other publications around religious diversity in the workplace, religion in schools, etc. So I was very fortunate that I already had some key networks in the religious communities. And of course, working for the Human Rights Commission since 2000, you know, following the September 11th attacks and the desecration of the Jewish cemeteries, there was a lot of fantastic community engagement initiatives that organization embarked on, which put me in a great position to connect and link and work and see the tremendous aroha and compassion that exists within our religious communities in Aotearoa.
And what was the reaction of the religious leaders when you said you are important, you have key roles, and we'd like you to be part of the community reaction when there is an emergency?
Yeah, I shouldn't be surprised, but the response was like a thank you. I think there's I don't fall into this sort of space, but I think a lot of people who work in government or even in local government are a little bit reluctant to engage with religious communities, and that might be, there might be some baggage around that in terms of the separation of, ensuring that your secular organisations remain secular, but I've never had that approach. All I see is the importance of religious communities, particularly religious leaders, and the role they play to ensure that communities take action. And I've seen that during my career in the public sector over 20 years. So very natural for me to engage with religious leaders. But the response from religious leaders was thank you, because most organisations don't think it's a bit risky. I was quite surprised. I got a lot of those comments. But also, I think critically, I think people understood the need to ensure that they have the capacity to be in a better position to support their communities during disasters, and they welcomed this initiative because I think people really, the heart's there, the compassion's there, but I think people were a little bit lost about the how. How do I go about it? And often people want to help, but some, because a lot of people do, some don't, mainly because they don't know where to start. So really the guide and this resource was really about building confidence to say, actually, you're already doing this in peacetime, if I can use that expression. How about, I call it enhanced business as usual during a response. You're doing what you do really well in peacetime, but you're working in an enhanced manner during a response, and you have the resources and you have the experience within your structures and your communities to get a good to get the job done.
And Rohan, I understand there have been 6 hui across the city where you invited people from certain regions to come and participate and to discuss. Can you tell us a little bit more about these hui?
Yeah, the community engagement process. So those huis were part of the community engagement process for the development of this guide. And I think the process really is an important aspect to understand about, I mean, we've got the resource, but the process really reflects the change of mindset and approach I was talking about before in the sector, and that's basically to ensure that we move away from a command top-down approach, which was traditionally the civil defence approach, to a shared conversation with community, and ensuring that we are promoting a community-led response, which is vital. And also critically that we are utilising the networks that exist, and also the experiences that various communities have of their own lived experience of being involved in emergency. So it was really important that at the hui that we listened, that we sought feedback, we listened to the concerns and issues. We also got, it was a bit of a pulse check in terms of where people were at, in terms of their own disaster resilience within, for their community, but also within their own religious organisation. And you know, it was a bit of a mixed bag in terms of responses. Some communities by their own admission weren't ready. They didn't feel they had the plans in place or didn't feel well prepared. Others, because they were kind of forced to because I've had to deal with crisis within the community, we're quite active and felt quite confident about mobilising and taking action in future events. So the hui were really important part of this process. And like I said before, in all those hui, we had our chiefs. So this chief executive of Auckland Emergency Management attended all those hui's, because I think it's really important that the community have influence, and they know that the people who are in the room who are listening are the people who can make things happen. So a lot of work went into those hui, and it was because it reflected the co-design element of this resource, which for me was vital.
And so one of the requests was a guide, a resilience guide. Was that the idea, or did you have the idea before?
No, we listened to what people required, and getting more guidance, strengthening links with official agencies, having templates for planning before and during a response was the feedback that we got. And definitely the resource is a reflection of the request from community, more than the top down. This is an idea that we had. It's very much bottom up.
And can you tell us a little bit about the difference between, you say, community-led and building up from the community, but in fact, it's about resilience of a religious community. So what's the difference between just having different communities from a different area and connecting with religious communities specifically?
A very good question. I think it's really the heart of this work. And I think traditionally, people think about community. When you define community, they think of place-based geographical communities, which provide a deep sense of belonging for many people in terms of the neighbourhood they belong to or the suburb they belong to. However, I define a community also much more broadly, and it also involves communities of identity and communities of interest, such as religious communities. So I think that it's a key aspect in terms of how you define communities, is because people go to places where they get a deep sense of belonging. And obviously being part of a community in place is important for some people, but being part of a religious community or being part of a community where you share belief or a culture provides tremendous sense of belonging for many Aucklanders. And these are the things that anchor people, particularly during crisis. So it was a deliberate sort of strategy to sort of broaden the approach and start to connect with leaders who are trusted by community, knowing that community go to people that they trust during a crisis. And that's not often located in place. It's located in maybe in a place of worship or a religious centre or through a leader who is well respected.
I think that also in Auckland, with the diverse religions within the city, there might be people who belong to a religious community but don't really identify with their local surrounding. So maybe you even manage to get people involved through religious communities into the wider community. Do you think that would have happened?
That's a big part of, I think the primary objective is to support religious leaders and their volunteer to support their members. Mm-hmm. But if there is capacity and a willingness to connect much broadly and wider, that's ultimately the dream, really, to connect people with each other who are presented with a common challenge. So, I mean, that is my passion, if you know a little bit about me, is to forge those bridges between either it could be a place-based community with a community of interest or various religious communities with each other. And, of course, we live in a country where people are well connected and they want to connect. It's just sometimes there are barriers, and I'm heartened that a project like this in partnership with the Village Diversity Centre, I believe, has contributed to people connecting and linking up with other community groups and other community members.
I was part of one hui on the North Shore, and I remember that there were people coming to the hall of the church in that example, and they had never been to the hall. So when you were talking about emergency, cases of emergency, and you need to have places where you can gather and where you have facilities, that's important just to get to know that there are these halls, there are these places in an area, which unless you're invited by a neutral organization like Auckland Emergency Management, they might never have come to this place.
Absolutely. And your reflections, echo a lot of things that I've heard from other people. I think we had one of the hui was out at the West Auckland, one was at the Avondale Islamic Centre, and we had wonderful participants from the local Buddhist communities, but they were very excited not just to contribute to the development of this project, but to actually visit the Islamic Centre, because it gave them an excuse for the first time. They've always wanted to go to the Islamic Centre, but they, they're probably, like you said, looking for invitation, and that particular hui gave them the license, I suppose, for lack of a better word, to actually go. And they were very excited to be there. And I think that was part of ensuring that the regional hui across Auckland, that the host were hosts from different religious communities. And I'd just like to acknowledge all those religious organisations that opened up their places of worship, religious centres for the hui to invite other people. And I think we did get feedback right from the beginning. We had a reference group, an interreligious reference group, and the feedback was to have these hui as interreligious hui, not as separate hui with separate organisations. So that I was very heartened by that recommendation, and and that's exactly how we design the community engagement process.
And I appreciated your comment earlier that one of the reasons why it's important to involve religious leaders or religious communities is the trust of people. So when you say go to a ratepayers hall or so, if they have never been to one, it's different to if the leader says, look, we are going to go to this hall because there's an emergency, and they trust that everything will be in place, and the religious leaders can also help providing support during an emergency. And I think that's all part of the trust and understanding of the respective cultures and languages.
Oh, absolutely. I always say relationship is a currency of a response, but trust is as well. And I think you've hit it on the head there. And this is the challenge that the civil defence emergency management sector has, is that there is the formal response, and the formal response looks like, setting up a civil defence centre. But we know that some people are reluctant for whatever reason. It could be systemic issues. It could be issues around past bad experiences of dealing with bureaucracy or officials, whatever it is. They might be reluctant to go to these formal sites. And some of those formal sites may not be, even though that the staff in there might be well-intentioned, might not have the cultural capability to respond appropriately. So that's why people would probably first foremost go to a place where they feel comfortable. And I think that's the main thing. When you're dealing with crisis, when you're being displaced from your home, you know, for during an event like a flood or a cyclone, you want to go to a place where you get comfort and you there are people there that you're familiar with. And I know, even though I've been an insider and I'm a bureaucrat and worked in the public sector, I know how hard it is for community members to, especially when they're vulnerable, to go to some of these formal centres. And the support is there, don't get me wrong. I think when you're dealing with some of that initial trauma, people want to go to places where they feel comfortable. And it's often places like places of worship and religious centres, places that particularly members of religious communities feel comfortable in. And that's similar to why people go to marae. You know, and often marae have played a role, as we know, during emergency response in this country, because they're a heart of a community, and people know their local marae, and they feel comfortable there. So, I suppose that was my inspiration as well. That the spaces that religious communities have are really well equipped. They've got the resources, they've got the right people in terms of offering pastoral care, they've got leaders who can provide reassurance. Look, it ticks all the right boxes in terms of my opinion, in terms of how to respond in a very compassionate way to people whose experience initially, particularly in that first 72 hours, is really ones of trauma and anxiety.
And I think that it's also sometimes it's very simple things like food or some cultural, what is appropriate or what is not appropriate. If a person sees their religious leader said, oh, he's there or she's there, they'll make sure that everything is okay. So I can eat and I can do this and that. I don't have to worry. If there are only people of a different culture, they might be afraid of touching anything. So that's just one of the things. But tell me a little bit more about the book itself, the Resilient Religious Communities Guide. It's online available through the RDC website. There are also copies available. Tell me a little bit more about it.
Well, it's set out in three sections. I mean, the first section is really an important one. It's really understanding emergency planning, because I think that was the feedback around what we, in terms of the hui and our regional engagement, was we need to be prepared, we need to be ready. So the first section is around emergency planning, and that, you know, a key component of planning is understanding your local and regional risks and hazards. So that section really talks about some of the top hazards in Auckland and the usual ones around flooding, other weather-related events, pandemic, and assessing your risk and looking at the impacts in terms of a number of pillars, social, economic, environmental, your built environment, and your own vulnerabilities in your own community. So it was really about getting people to think about those risks. The second section is really about, we've touched on it, and really important, it's about leading in emergencies. And this is really, and the resource, and I've probably alluded to it, but I just want to stress it, the resource is designed for religious leaders and their volunteers. And so this second section is really about roles and responsibilities. It's around a shared responsibility, really, and it talks about the role of official agencies, because it's really important. So I think there's a lot of confusion about what the role of official agencies is, and it's good to spell that out, and that's what that section does. But it also stresses that those official agencies are under enormous pressure. So it really is about religious leaders and their volunteers have a role to play. You know, that official agencies can't do it on their own. So it really stresses taking steps in terms of identifying who might be part of your a response or emergency team in your community. And it also looks at some key things in a response, and those are communication, using your channels to get the information to your community. Information, as in, you know, this is better than anyone else, is vital. Find information is vital. And information, when you talk about some of our religious communities who are well connected with each other, information moves fast. The communications channels, and it really that section's about religious leaders and their volunteers or religious organisations thinking about the existing communications channels that they have and how they would utilise it in terms of a response. And also, importantly, it talks about welfare support and what welfare support would look like. And you've touched on it already from a religious perspective. The welfare resources are already there.
Yes.
It's just a matter of tapping into it. So that section's really about providing some guidance around what good leadership looks like in emergencies. And the final section's really about setting up your place of worship and religious centre as a community-led hub or a community-led centre during a response. And I just have to stress there, and the that section stresses it, that's different from a civil defence centre. A community-led centre doesn't come in a direction of officials, whereas a civil defence centre does. So really, it's really inviting religious leaders to open up their space as an emergency hub or emergency operational centre or a place of shelter. It doesn't, and I think I like what you said before, try to keep it simple. You don't need to have some amazing emergency coordination centre. You offer what you can. So we know that places of worship during the weather-related events, during the floods and Cyclone Gabrielle, opened up as a place of shelter, and that was for overnight shelter. And food was either offered or there were offers of donations from other groups, right? And that's what people offered, and that was it. Other places of worship, religious centres, did that but went further and continued to support the community into recovery.
Really the first place of contact. That's important for people to know that they can contact their religious community, and if they know about where the centers are or which center is close to you and can provide you with shelter. And as you say, the religious communities are connected, and especially when the same community, like even if you go to a church or a temple in a different area, they would tell you in case of an emergency, this is the place that is closest to you.
Absolutely. And I think you've touched on something important again, is that I think from the weather-related events earlier on in the year, you know, official agencies like Auckland Emergency Management learnt a lot. And I knew this intuitively, but I think my former colleagues learnt that how vital a community-led response is, because we saw, as you know, a number of religious organisations and other organisations stand up,
yes,
and support their communities as they did. And that was the back of, you know, 2.5 or 3 years of religious organisations and other community organisations supporting community during the COVID response. So it really was a good learning for the official agencies to promote also other places. So not just promoting civil defence centres that are opened by official agencies, but other community-led centres that have opened up. So, you know, publicising, promoting where these places are going forward is an integral part of, I think, an effective response.
Thank you so much, Rohan, and it's been really interesting. And I will put the link to the resilience guide on the website and the Facebook page for the broadcast. And just quickly before the end of the interview, I'd like to mention what is coming up at Titipona Mo Study and Joy. We talked a lot about culture and religion. So next Monday, I will give a Zoom session on the 4th of December about St. Nicholas, history, legend, and culture. next Monday, 7 o'clock to 8:30 p.m. on Zoom, and please register with us at www.studyjoy.nz. Kia kaha, keep safe, and thank you, Rohan.
Pleasure. Out there, oh, peace is calling.